This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Very glad to have you with us today. Well, 2018 is underway. Congress is coming back this week with the small tasks of keeping the government funded and finding an agreement on a limited but extremely controversial immigration deal involving the DACA program. The new year has rung in new protests in Iran. We'll have coverage of those marches in just a few minutes. America's first day back at work in the new year, and it's a good time to look ahead. Every year at about this time, we have our friend Ian Bremmer on the show. Ian is president and founder of the political risk consulting firm, the Eurasia Group. And every year, Ian and his company make their predictions for 10 risks for the year ahead on the global stage. Ian Bremmer is in the studio. Welcome back.
Good to be with you.
And we do have this fine little tradition. Now, let's go down your list in predictions for 2018, Ian, because your first prediction is that China loves a vacuum, sort of China stepping up to a position of primacy on the world stage. And this is connected to a prediction you had last year, which is independent America, sort of this idea of America going it alone, eschewing its former multilateral relationships, and what might happen if we pursue America first.
Xi Jinping, the leader of China, has now consolidated enough power. The Chinese economy is a lot larger. And they're now, especially given Trump and given America First, much more willing to publicly say, we're prepared to be a global leader. We're prepared to take on some of those responsibilities. And, you know, I would say that so far, of all of the things Trump has managed to accomplish internationally, by far the most important is that it's provided a really profound structural opportunity for Xi Jinping and for China to play a much greater role on the global stage. And that's really going to play out in 2018.
Well, Ian, let's get a couple more predictions from you for 2018. Not all of them are pleasant, I have to say. You say that accidents between countries, poor communication could be a major risk. You also say the global tech war is becoming a cold war. What does that mean?
Well, to start with accidents, I mean, I think anyone that looks at 2018 has to feel like the headlines are making us nervous, whether it's over North Korea or Iran or the Americans and Russians and Turks operating in close military proximity without coordination in Syria, cyber conflict. I don't want to sit here and tell you one of those things is definitely going to explode in 2018. But, you know, we've been fortunate not having a major geopolitical crisis really since the Cuban Missile Crisis decades ago. In 2018, you have to feel like the likelihood of one or more of those things going badly is higher than at any point since then. And the tech war, you've got two superpowers. You've got the United States and you have China. China today has the most powerful supercomputers. They have more operational industrial robots than the United States. The size of their top two tech companies in market cap, Tencent and Alibaba, are basically as big as America's top two, means that you increasingly have two different models for technology in the global economy, and they don't play nicely with each other in 2018. I think that's going to be a real interesting challenge and risk for the global markets this year.
You predicted last year, Ian, that North Korea and its march toward nuclear weapons and missiles would be a major factor on the world scene. I think by any measure, you've proven to be correct. But I thought it was remarkable that there's not a lot about North Korea on your predictions for 2018. Do you think that the United States and South Korea and North Korea and the rest of the world have sort of reached a moment of stability where all of these tests will lead to a sort of a new normal?
This year, instead of having a specific North Korea risk, we lumped it in with these accidents in number two. So it's gone up. But frankly, there's a better shot of diplomacy in 2018 between all sides than we've probably seen in decades. And yet, the possibility that North Korea and the peninsula could end up in flames because you have a test and let's say an ICBM goes over Japanese territory and it falls and it kills some people, or you have military exercises that escalate and someone gets hurt. And between the U.S. and North Korea, you have no trust and you have more risk acceptance from the Trump administration. The chance of an accident going profoundly wrong over North Korea, as over many places, is unfortunately much greater in 2018 than we've seen in the past.
Meanwhile, you say that the opening of dialogue with Iran that was achieved through the nuclear deal, the P5+1, in the closing months of the Obama administration may fall by the wayside with the Trump administration, and that the relationship with Iran could reach a precipice.
That's right. I think it's close to a coin flip as to whether or not the Iran nuclear deal will stay intact in 2018. What we do know is even if it does, the United States is planning to take tougher economic measures against Iran separate from the nuclear deal. Now, if the U.S. is putting measures in place, even by keeping this deal intact, that Trump himself has said he's not going to certify, but he's allowing to continue for the time being, the Iranians are not seeing all those economic benefits. Hardliners in Iran certainly are going to put more pressure on the deal and may take steps that could lead that deal to fall apart. It's also conceivable that Trump, you could see him saying, that's it, enough, this is the worst deal ever. He said that before. He blows it up, and then the Iranians start redeveloping their nuclear capabilities, at which point by the end of 2018, people are starting to talk about the potential, once again, of Israeli strikes against Iran itself.
The United Kingdom is party to those talks as well in the P5 plus one. And Ian, you've got some predictions about the UK. I don't know if people could have predicted Brexit and the narrow vote in the first place. But could anyone have predicted what's going on now, which is really sort of a national regret over the Brexit vote and a difficulty in finding a way to actualize this separation?
It's interesting. I mean, even though there may be regrets, those regrets are not going to lead to undoing Brexit. So 2018 is going to be a profoundly challenging diplomatic year for the UK. It's going to have negative economic consequences for their markets. And you also have the possibility of Jeremy Corbyn from the Labour Party coming into office sometime this year if Theresa May falls apart. She's very unpopular. And that would have a very negative effect, perhaps even more so than the Brexit negotiations on the UK.
Ian, we already talked a little bit about China and about North Korea. I think in this country, we have a tendency to view Asia and Asian politics as a monolith. One of your predictions says that that's not really true at all, and that identity politics in Southern Asia could become a big factor in 2018.
It's happening in a few different ways. You have anti-Chinese sentiment across Southeast Asia, where Chinese populations are increasingly economically dominant, and there's backlash against them. You certainly have growing Islamism, which is picking up in part because ISIS rousted from Middle East, North Africa, moving back in some cases and having more of an impact in Southeast Asia. And there's just more radicalism picking up from disenfranchised populations. And finally, Indian nationalism that's being promoted and supported by Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India. So in all three of these cases across this part of the world, I think there's a growing story that national identities are going to become more divisive and going to lead to more conflict.
Now, you say that identity politics of a different kind could be very problematic and a major risk in Africa. Look, ISIS appears to be waning in the Middle East, but you're warning that al-Shabaab and related Islamist groups could pose a major risk in Africa.
Yeah, I mean, for a while now, there's been this hope that Africa's decade is finally here and they're going to see great growth. But there's also really lousy governance and borders are really weak and there's not much regionalism helping to integrate these communities. And you are seeing more extreme and violent forms of both Islam and in some cases Christianity. In all of those cases, that's making it harder to make a solid case for why you would want to invest in Africa long term. The interest of the United States in paying a lot for security is nowhere close to what it used to be. The Germans are talking about it, but they've got a weaker government than they've had over the last 10 years. Merkel still has to put her coalition together, of course. The French can only do so much. And the Chinese, even though they're economically dominant in many of these countries, militarily, they're still playing a very small role.
Well, Ian Bremmer, one of the things that you do that I love with your predictions is you talk about red herrings, the things that we're worried about that you say, oh, maybe not quite as big of a risk as they seem. What are a couple of those?
One we put is the Eurozone. I think there are a lot of people that have thought that Europe is ready to fall apart. But with Brexit going as badly as it has, Euroscepticism on the continent itself has been reduced. Also, the United States. The fact is that after you get tax policy done, there's not that much that's going to happen in domestic policy in the U.S.
That may be on the policy side, but wouldn't you predict the potential for some major risks domestically when it comes to scandal or just the president's willingness to continue to upend the political culture?
Well, actually, for the first time, we had listed in the risks this year the erosion of institutions, in part because of the Trump administration, though it runs much deeper than that. Many of the institutions that really form the foundation of liberal democracy in the United States are no longer what they were. And certainly the feeling that American elections are legitimate, the feelings that separation of powers really work and function, the existence of a free and open media that serves the citizens of the United States, I would argue that these things have started to erode in a way that will be hard to get them back.
Ian, before we let you go, let's do a little bit of accountability. You okay with that?
Absolutely.
Well, you definitely predicted, I think, accurately that North Korea and its missile tests and nuclear ambitions would become a major issue in 2017. You definitely predicted independent America, sort of America first, and China stepping into the breach. That's great. Where'd you get it wrong?
I think two things of our list last year that didn't come to fruition. First is an expectation that central banks were going to get more politicized. That did not happen, particularly under the Trump administration. I think to the surprise of a lot of people that, you know, you ultimately got people that were less political and more technocratic being appointed, and that Trump has largely been pretty hands off in terms of Fed policy, monetary policy. The other that I think that didn't play out, and thankfully on this one, is China overreacting. The United States-China relationship had the potential to move towards trade war. On those two, I think we didn't get it right. But I'm glad you did this because, you know, if you don't actually go back and have accountability for this stuff, there's really not much point in putting it out there.
Sure, and it's a great excuse to have you back again next year, Ian Bremmer, to find out which of these predictions for risk in 2018 you got right and you got wrong. So I hope you'll come back.
I'll be there.
Ian Bremmer, president and founder of the Eurasia Group.